Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back. My name is Kit.
I'm an enigma.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, Streaming Fallout, Episode 8. The finale is what's on the docket today. Thank you guys for tuning into all of our Fallout coverage. Tune in this Friday for our coverage of Episode 8.
Eight.
The Last Jedi of our streaming Star Wars series.
Ooh, I can't wait for people to hear that one. Ooh, it's going to be spicy.
It is. It always goes well, the Last Jedi discussions on the internet.
Yeah, I love it.
No doubt. No doubt. And then look forward to our coverage of The Boys and House of the Dragon Season 2 in June.
Mm-hmm.
We might even dip our toes, our little Piggly Wigglies, into Acolyte. Who knows?
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Ooh, boy, excited for that one. But yeah, right now we're gonna stay in the apocalypse on or about or near Philly.
Put your apocalypse on this. That's what we're talking about.
That's right. And make my cock explode. That was a Fallout reference, so it's not weird.
Happens to a lot of guys.
Yeah,
not me
most of the time.
Yeah, not me though.
We've been enjoying our coverage. Hopefully you liked our episode Monday talking about episodes 2 through 7. I guess I'm wanting to know what your overall thoughts are on the show now that the finale, now we've all witnessed the finale, if you're excited for season 2, and then we'll do a scene by scene, play by play recap of the episode, followed by our rad moments, our top 3 favorite moments of the episode, and some bobbleheads, maybe some Easter eggs in this final episode that we caught, as far as, and then the special, the best performer,
mm-hmm.
kind of retroactively of the show a little bit, maybe. Of this episode specifically, at least, though. And then that'll be it for our streaming Fallout series. Mr. Jimmy, the Enigma.
Mm.
Who really cares?
Who the fuck is Jimmy? Yeah.
Nobody knows or cares.
I haven't figured it out yet, but here we go.
What'd you think of the finale? And then in that same vein, you know, the show in general.
So I went into the show, obviously already a fan. I've been playing the games for a long time. And I kind of talked about it a little bit on last episode is I really just fell in love with learning more about the lore, as I am one of those people that like to skip.
Lore is better than data, as Steve always says.
I love lore way better than data.
I like learning about the stuff that I probably should honestly already know about. I think the characters in the show are really good. Two of the three of them. We can get into that a little bit later. But I think they did a really good job letting people know that aren't necessarily fans of the game or have even heard about it. My wife being one of them, she liked the few episodes that we watched and she knows zero about the show or the game. Just letting them into the universe and showing them, you know, what us nerds have been nerding out about for many eons, right?
Pull back the curtain.
Yeah.
What are you nerds nerding out about? Let me see. I want to know.
Yeah, let's the bros in to our nerd society. And I like coming and joining you guys on this show. One, because I don't look at things from a technical side. You guys are a little more adept to seeing things a little bit different than me. I would assume, or I would compare myself to kind of like the average American watching television, right? Like, is it good or is it bad? Those are really the those are the two things that I look at when I'm watching a show. But to hear you know, some of your guys' insights, whether it's the, you know, technically how it was cut and put together, or your take on a certain situation, is something that I really enjoy doing. So I'm glad I could be a part of it. I love the show. I'm really excited for the setup for season two. It was already announced, so that's exciting. And yeah, I liked it. I was a big fan.
What about you, Steve?
I think if you listen to the episode on Monday, you probably kind of get the overall impression of what my feelings are so far with the season. And it doesn't really change after episode 8. I think episode 8 does a pretty solid job of wrapping things up. There's actually something I really, really enjoy that happens in this episode that we'll get into when we get to the recap. And I think that kind of goes with what I said last episode, which is that the best plot thread for me, at least for this entire season, has been like the history of Vault-Tec and like how the vaults came to be and that sort of thing. That's been the most interesting, because that's also something we didn't get to see in the game. So it's fun that they're exploring the origin story of the vaults and the true purpose behind them, which is something that was always alluded to in the games and hinted at, but it was kind of cool to see it coming together in real life. And the mystery of Vault 31 is enticing. I like where that was going, but overall there's something missing in the show. It's hard for me to put down exactly what it is. There's this lack. I don't know. There's this lack of fully reckoning the apocalypse, I think, with the characters. And I guess that makes sense, because the characters, you know, the apocalypse is old hat to them. But even like Lucy coming out of the vault for the first time, I feel like there was this lack of like, wow, it's fucked up here.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, she just kind of rolls with it, which in her character is a little okie dokie. Sure. But I think there's just something I can't quite put my thumb on it. That's missing from the show that keeps it from me saying like, I really like this show. I'm like, I'll be honest, when the credits rolled on episode 8, I was kind of like, thank God I don't have to watch another one. I'm good. Like, I'm sold. I've had enough with this show. I assume it will be renewed.
Yeah. It's already greenlit, and Bezos will
throw money at anything.
I mean, I know he's not technically in charge of Amazon anymore, but how much do we really believe he's not pulling the strings?
Right.
But I mean, The Expanse is a show that makes no money that he just enjoyed. And they paid for what, two more seasons of that, just so he could see what happens.
Sure. And Rings of Power has another season. Yeah. And from what I can tell, that was not a very well-received show.
Yeah.
So I mean, we liked it.
Amazon is not a canceller of shows as often as someone like Netflix.
If this was a Netflix show, they'd have been like episode 2. They'd be like, cut it, trim it out.
They're like, does Jeff like it? Keep it.
Remove it from the For You pages.
How cool would that be?
What?
I mean, it would suck to be a piece of shit billionaire that's like not helping people suffering, but at the same time, I could just pay for stuff I want to see.
That's true.
Like, you know, somebody should make a movie about this. Here's $1 billion. Like,
live action rated R SpongeBob.
Is Walton Goggins available?
Daddy would like to see that next week. Make it happen.
You got 3 days.
3 whole days. Yeah,
or he dies.
Oh.
But I mean, that, yeah, Fallout. Maybe in a couple years from now, when the new season 2 comes out, I'll probably be a little bit more like, okay, I'm ready to get back into this world, see a little bit of where they go with the series. Because I think the way they do end does leave a little bit of enough of breadcrumbs to keep you going, at least for me. And but as of right now, when the credits rolled for episode 8, I was like kind of relieved it was over, if I'm being completely truthfully 100% honest.
Being a hundo.
Yeah,
I'm 100.
I'm trying to keep it real.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I think that for me, the show got better as it went along. I think episode 4, as we said on Monday, was like the really almost the peak of the show, but also something that really hooked me. I like the idea of a character like Cooper and that dog roaming the wasteland. That's that swagger, his tattered overcoat, like everything about that is awesome to me. The evolution of Lucy into becoming a slightly less positive and, you know, more tough and jaded, but also at the same time, always keeps that air of relentless positivity. And, you know, I think that juxtaposed against the wasteland is really funny and interesting. Even Maximus, after episode 6, became a really compelling character to me. when he was sitting in the robe and enjoying the comforts of the vault and, you know, for feeling secure for the first time in his life. But then,
dude, I get it.
With chagrin.
they gave me slippers.
Oysters, you know,
yeah, that popcorn.
She's going to come back and make my cock explode, I think, at some point. This is nice.
I do love that part in that episode when they're carrying her away and he sees her in the window and he's eating the popcorn and he's just like, okay, one more bite. Yeah. Okay, actually two more bites.
You know, all that stuff, it just worked better. And I think with this finale, they really stuck the landing. Me personally, I'm so into the idea of a next season and Cooper, now that he's kind of softened and we've learned how the goodness in him and how jaded he is, we now know his motivation is that he thinks his wife and daughter could be alive somewhere because mm-hmm. that's in this universe. A lot of these Vault-Tec executives, almost all of them went into these tanks or they can still be alive, right? We found out the origins of Hank. We found out the origins of Buds, Betty.
Buds.
Bud, for some reason, didn't get a tank. He just got a Roomba in his brain.
Yeah. That's what the subtitle said. Brain with a Roomba.
Yeah.
Brain on a Roomba. Yep. I was like, huh.
Yep. But ultimately, I don't know if the games are like this, but what really sold it for me and what I didn't expect or even need from this show is that it became a really biting satire on capitalism.
It's 100% in the games, yeah.
Really, that was super compelling to me. It came, and like I said, I didn't expect or need that. You know, it was about as deep as a puddle for most of this runtime of the season, and I was mm-hmm. fine with that. And yet, you're talking to one of the world's biggest fans of the show, Reacher. Like, I don't need much. Sometimes a good dad show, effectively made and entertaining, is fine. And yet, you know, the whole idea that Vault-Tec found it in their best interest, which doesn't make that much sense. Like, I know capitalism is rampantly evil in many aspects, but like the idea of like destroying the entire world to the point where the currency you're making is no longer valid doesn't seem like something they would do. But like, right. I get it's a satire. So like, I like it. And like, yeah. I was like really sold on it after this episode. And this fucking episode is gas, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So
I wonder if my less enthusiasm towards this show is just merely a byproduct of the fact that it all dropped at once and we had to marathon through it in like a day.
So why
and a half?
I do think you were probably put off and stressed by what we had to do for the pod.
Yeah, but behind the scenes, it's been a very stressful time for me. So I'm sure like that's like an incredibly, that is probably the reason.
Binge while, I honestly don't know. All that shit I talked, I don't know that this show, I don't know that some of the episodes were good enough
to get you to watch.
I would have been so hyped for the following week. You know, I probably would have fell off for a few weeks and then binged them anyway, just because up until 4, I wasn't like super into the show anyway. So it was kind of to the show's benefit that I could watch the next one right away.
So
for me,
what's the benefit of dropping a show like that? Like, do you guys know?
To them?
Well, just, yeah, why would you drop all 8 episodes? They do this quite a bit. Prime does it a lot. Why would you just drop the whole season instead of trying to bring viewers back?
I think to Chris's point, I know Prime does this thing where they'll release the first 3 episodes of the season and then do a week to week. And I think maybe to your point, like maybe they knew like, oh, this show really starts cooking on episode 4. So if we drop the 3, maybe people are like, oh, these are the 3? Oh, I'm out. Maybe. I don't know. It was a weird decision because not only did they decide out of nowhere to drop it all at once, but then they're like, oh, also it's a day earlier than we announced. It's very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know. It almost feels like they lost confidence in it because that was the same day that the review embargo was supposed to lift that they decided to drop the whole show. Maybe they didn't expect people to like it as much as they do because people love it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. It's usually a sign of lack of confidence, you know? And now sometimes it can bite you in the ass the other way. Like the show Invincible is a great show. They split up season 2 into 2 halves. So weekly and then like a month and a half break and then the other half of season 2. And virtually no one was talking about the show on the second half of season 2. It seems to have destroyed the show's momentum that they did that.
Yeah.
So it's a gamble. But in general, when you have a good show, there's nothing like a good water cooler discourse. You know, HBO's got that strong, oh, wow, a new show comes out tonight as we record. We're recording this on Sunday. There's a new show on HBO tonight called The Sympathizer, starring Robert Downey Jr. Oh, yeah,
looks good.
Directed by Park Chan-wook, which is my favorite director.
Yeah, I love him.
But HBO's got that, like, event, world-stopping TV.
It's the Last whole of box Us, office.
House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, all the way back to The Sopranos. Like, you, it's Sunday night. Yeah. Everybody's talking about it on Monday.
Succession.
Articles picking apart all the Easter eggs and what might happen the next episode come out all week. And then everyone's, by the time you get to the third episode, 25, 30 million people are watching the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get to, that word of mouth gets time to, whereas with a binge show, everybody watches it over the weekend. And by Wednesday, nobody's talking about it anymore.
Yeah.
You can't get any videos or articles to get clicks or views. So nobody's making content about it. Mm-hmm. Fucking dorks like us on a podcast are, you know,
hey,
just rushing right through the coverage.
That's us.
You know, it's just not as fun. So I don't know why they would have done it this time, because it's not Amazon's model. It's really not. You know, for the most part, they don't do binge stuff. You know, that's a Netflix thing. But
yeah, I understand. You mentioned them normally dropping three and then the rest. That's kind of how they did The Boys. And obviously that show is amazing and it picks up. But maybe you're probably right. Lack of confidence. Just with it being a video game adaptation, a lot of those aren't well received. Mm-hmm. The exception of The Last of Us. I think they just weren't ready.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we were at South by Southwest when I think the news of the or around the time that they announced that they were going to be dropping everything at once. And that just seemed to be like sort of the, what we were picking up was that there was not confidence in the show going into it, which was why we were like, do we even cover it? What do we do? Like, we're kind of worried about it. But I mean, thankfully for them, it does seem like people really do like it and they found their audience and I'm glad it worked out for them. But yeah, it's just a weird time for me specifically to binge 8 hours of the show in like 2 days.
Yeah, me personally, I'm for it.
I was locked in a hotel room last night.
Against your will?
No, I wish.
Watching the show?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You just kind of left that hanging.
Yeah, you left that hanging,
You weren't relating to why that was relevant.
Who knows?
Just wanted to tell us, tell on somebody.
Help me.
I was locked in a hotel room last night.
Kit and Steve won't let me out of it. Steve, like, you have to watch.
Yeah.
Jimmy keeps swallowing vigorously into the microphone. Oh, and every time he does it, it makes me laugh in the middle of Steve talking.
I'm a gulper.
Steve's just like, I really miss my mother. It's been.
I'm trying to lean.
And he thinks he's being sneaky, which is what's making it even funnier. So, mini hoozle.
I'll just stay thirsty.
I'm glad you're getting hydrated, man. Yeah. That's the main thing.
That's healthy, man. Yeah. Stay healthy.
But yeah, overall, I think we're all pretty high on this show. But I am shocked at you, Steve. I think your life stresses have brought the show down a bit for you, because you're a bigger fan of the games. You know, you do like a sci-fi typically.
I do like a sci-fi.
A sci-fi.
Yeah, it's his favorite genre is sci-fi. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. I mean, it'd be interesting, like, when season two comes out, because I'll probably rewatch the show again in preparation for season two, because I'll watch season two. So it'll be interesting to see if I like come around on it more when my life isn't on fire.
You're just bald by then.
I've lost all my hair.
What's wrong with that? For no particular reason, I'm wondering. But this episode opens with our boy Max.
It's called The Beginning.
That's right.
I like that fun. The first episode is the end. This one's the beginning.
It's like
it's not
reverse.
Confusing at all.
Wow.
But it opens with Max in a Brotherhood chopper with his fake head, right? Being returned home.
My note is Maximus sits on top of a washing machine. Because if you see his shot, the way he's bouncing around is very quick and consistent, as if he was sitting on top of a running washing machine.
Yeah.
It's like him and the character in Ready Player One when he sleeps on the washer and dryer to show that he's poor. He's so poor.
He's so poor. He sleeps on his washer and dryer.
He's got the fake head. He's returned to base. And we see, I think it's the Overseer. I forget what it's called, but he's up there looking down.
Quintus or something?
Yeah. You're wearing the knight's red. Yeah.
Yeah. The cleric.
He's wearing the knight's red, right?
Immediately called him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's where'd you get that?
And you know, they find out immediately that it's not in the head and they're just going to shoot him in the back. But Dane is there and they accuse him like, it seems like everyone in your company suffers ill luck. And then, but Dane's there and Dane's like begging for Max's life and admits that they injured themselves.
Yeah.
None of us called that.
I thought that was an interesting, I like that it said, without a doubt, Maximus did not do that to Dane.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, I was just scared of going in the wilderness. Yeah. So I just maimed myself.
Yeah. Scribes die
horribly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the balls to do that, dude.
Yeah.
Esquires do die a lot.
We'll just send you another one. We got tons of them.
What we didn't see in the first episode is a scene where Dane is in the infirmary like, this was such a bad idea. What the fuck was I thinking? Yeah. Holy shit.
There's a lot of foot wounds in this show. There's three.
Nolan have a foot fetish?
Three severe foot wounds.
Yeah, Michael Emerson gets his foot shot off and then grinded into a metal foot.
Yeah.
Dane has this happen to them. What's the other one?
Oh, Thaddeus.
Thaddeus gets his toesies stepped on.
Yeah. A lot of Piggly Wigglies were injured in the making of this production.
And the swap of the fingers. That's not a foot, but...
That's like the foot for your arms.
It is. It's got flanges, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we talked about her dead stinky finger the entire
time. We didn't. You can always see it like discolored. And it's really so
funny when it pops up in the frame because you forget about it. Yeah. And when she holds up your hand, like, it's a dead finger.
Yeah. She's like, want to have sex? And it's just sitting there. And he's like, not really.
No. What's that smell?
But it like works still. Yeah. My finger supply is running low.
Does it? Coop puts it on, right? Coop. No. I said Coop we're bros.
Coop.
Oh.
Coop has his bitten off and he sews it back on.
Yeah, he carries his own finger around with him and then sews it back on. But she is given a finger by Snip Snip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought for some reason before he harvests her organs, he gives her a new finger.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
This won't hurt a bit.
My finger supply is running low.
Oh, no.
That's embarrassing.
I thought there was a dick in that drawer, to be honest with you.
Really?
There was like...
Steve would love that.
Oh, let me see.
It looked like a big toe, maybe. But when I first saw it, it looked like a ball sack and a dick. I was like, that's not a finger.
If you just put a dick on her hand, this won't hurt a bit.
Yeah.
Dane's begging for Max's life. And they ask what happened in the next scene. Dane manages to convince them not to spare him. And he also is saying, I'll take you to the real head. I know where it is. You know, that's important to them. And we see the cleric talking to him privately in the next scene. And he asks what happened to Titus. And he says he died running. He was a real little bitch about it. He was a real Michael Rapaport about it.
You didn't tell me that Knight Titus was actually Michael Rapaport.
And then he says,
from deep blue sea,
the brotherhood has fallen far. Power is taken, not given. A lesson that you seem to have learned.
That's a cold piece.
It is. I like how he like kind of respects him for taking the armor. You know, he's like, that was a real manly move.
Yeah. And he's like, we will
rebuild. That was a real power move.
Oh,
but he looks around and
knows armor that. Move. Yeah. He's like, with me leading the fellowship and you as its swords, we will build a new fellowship. Will you build a home with me? And I thought that was really sweet. Like, let's go home together.
I love you, Max.
Can I call you Max?
Home is where the Max is. That's what I say.
Max, have you ever thought about how hands are really the feet of your arms?
I think about it quite a bit.
All the time, sir.
Anyway. Yeah, so he wants to start a new brotherhood with whatever the power that's hidden in the doctor's head is. We don't know yet. It's called fusion. I keep calling Lucy Ella throughout my notes.
It's Goosey.
That's adorable. Yeah, Goosey.
Yeah.
It says Goosey right here.
The goose is loose.
I love that in that last episode. Yeah, she says it's Lucy and he like checks his notes. Nope, says Goosey.
Puts the glasses on. Nope, definitely Goosey.
But Lucy shows up to Flame Mother's crib.
The observatory, famous landmark in Los Angeles.
The Los Angeles.
Yep.
We cut to Cooper listening to the Vault-Tec meeting. It's in the past. And we get to see, Betty.
Young Betty?
Young Betty is in there. You know, she's like a secretary of some kind.
Whoa, young Betty.
And he's been, we didn't talk about this in our mid-season recap at all, but he's been co-opted by the Hollywood Forever crew. Moldaver. We ran into Moldaver, who's somehow alive. That was a huge part we didn't talk about. And now Betty is somehow still alive. What the fuck is going on, Steve? You know? And he's worried that his wife is up to no good, but he's like still holding out hope. So he's listening to their board meeting. Come on, Barb, set him straight. You know? And it's this heartbreaking moment where he's waiting for his wife, who he thinks is a good person, to stop the madness, right? And again, all the impetus of all of this is that someone told him there's no dogs allowed in the vault. And he's like, hold the fuck up.
Hold up. You saying I can't bring Roosevelt with me into the vault?
No doggos? Who said?
What's funny is how big that thing is he's got in his ear.
It's so noticeable.
They don't have miniaturized electronics.
I understand that, but it's just funny. He's like,
I do like that when he does have it in and someone he always turns his head and like, oh, hey, what's going on?
nothing over here.
Yeah, it's a good little.
I don't have a fucking hot dog hanging out of my ear.
But in the last episode, we didn't really talk about meeting Bud, who's sort of the guy that runs Vol-Tank and is sort of
Bud's
his wife Barb's boss.
Yeah,
but he was the former CEO or not CEO, but like he was involved
in the military.
He was in charge of like the product management for the power armor during the Anchorage battle, and Cooper automatically doesn't like that guy because that series of armor has a very specific design flaw that led to the death of a lot of soldiers. Mm-hmm. And when he tells that dude in the previous episode, it's like, ha, well, you know, we're just moving forward with it. You know, he just kind of brushes it off, but he tells him quickly that he has like this great idea for something called Buds. Cause you know, the problem with capitalism and ideas is ideas that take centuries to manifest. Your workforce dies. So he's working with a bunch of junior executives to help him foresee his plans or his plans come to fruition.
Yeah.
He's so excited about it.
The same managers that might live for the same centuries. Maybe that's what his plan is.
Just
right.
Just maybe.
And it's intercut with Norm's exploration of Vault 31. And there is no Vault 31. It's just an empty area. We find out Buds, all of the Vault-Tec executives are being kept alive in stasis for centuries and then kind of woken up one at a time to be the junior executive, the manager. It's just management, you know, of the vaults. But in there is, I think, Bud, his brain on a Roomba.
Yeah, the guy who created this doesn't even get a stasis. He's not frozen or not.
And he's like really ineffectual, like the whole bit where he's like, you can't be in here. Initiate protocol 53. Hold still.
Hold still.
Let me stick you with this.
I love that line when he's like, you won't see anything in there. And he like turns the lights on. Oh, shit. He's going to see everything. Yeah.
it's goofy. But yeah, everybody. There's the whole bit in the past timeline where Barb's idea is that everybody gets to make their own vault and then we'll wipe the surface clean. Right. And there's definitely some Easter eggs in this section as far as I've never played the games, but I can imagine each of the ideas that they come up with have to be vaults that were in the games.
They are specific vaults.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we also find out that Henry, the guy that's been calling, the big fan of Cooper, is Hank.
Lucy's dad,
Hank McClane. And he's very curious.
And it's such a nice little point that when Hank runs into him and it's a de-aged Kyle MacLachlan. And he's like, man, I really love when you killed Jorge in your movie. And it's like the scene that Cooper was like, I really don't like the scene. I don't feel like my character did.
But it's a great touch.
But this dude fucking loves it. And it just kind of, it's a nice little cherry on the whipped cream.
Of how different their outlook on life is.
Right.
And all of this is intercut with Moldaver, the flame mother, talking to Lucy. You know, you came out not just to look for your dad, but because you were curious about what the outside is.
Who has Hank in a birdcage?
She does. It's a giant birdcage. Which is one of my favorite movies, Hank in a Birdcage.
Yeah.
It's so heartbreaking to watch Cooper listen to this. At one point, Barb says, we're just going to drop the bomb. That's the only way we can guarantee that this plan comes to fruition, right? Because they've been withholding technology and peace negotiations because it's not good for business. People are less likely to buy vaults if the war doesn't look like it's going to happen. But she says, we'll literally drop the bomb. And that's a bomb dropped.
Yeah. It's,
so are we supposed to believe that the nukes were actually dropped by Vault-Tec?
Well, at the very least they initiated it. Yeah. They like made it happen.
Like started the war.
Oh, like bombed somebody first. And they also bombed Shady Sands, right?
Yeah. After Hank does specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably a mini nuke.
Yeah. That's wild.
Did you catch the little moment where all the executives, the Robco, the Westech, the big MJ guys, they're all arguing and Barb gets like a little message on her Pip-Boy from a shadowy figure that's watching everything from a different room above them.
I saw them cut to that.
I thought that was Cooper that she could see was listening or something.
No, it's like a shadowy figure. Like this is the dude really pulling the strings behind everybody. I think this would be the big mystery in season two is who that dude is.
Interesting.
But she gets that little message from him. And that's when she kind of pipes up and says, hey, we are such, we're masters of capitalism. We're so successful at it because of the spirit of competition. And that's how she pitches the vaults to them is like, you know, you'll all invest into the vault system and get your own vault to have these experiments to see who can create. We'll be competing to see who can create the best future and may the best experiment win type of thing. And that's when they're all like, oh, I would like an experiment where all the children are orphaned and all that stuff.
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah,
a big baddie.
Bud says, you know, the future for humanity comes from one word, management.
He also says, what's the greatest enemy?
Time.
And then Cooper's like, time. I'm guessing it. Yep, I was right.
Well, that's what.
What if it cuts him and he was like,
well, he tells him that earlier in a couple episodes before when he first meets Bud. He goes on his little time.
Was it at the party, the house party he was at? Or
I think technically he does it before that because at the house party, he's sort of like, hey, it's Bud.
It was again. On
he's
set like, all right,
cool. Yeah. And he leaves.
Fuck that guy.
It was on set when he met him. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I like Bud's obsession with time is appropriate because he invents the thing that can let people live, you know, ostensibly forever. So interesting. And we still don't know how Moldaver lasted that long though.
Yeah. There's a lot about Moldaver that when the series ends, I still have so many questions about that character. Like I think they raise more questions about her in this episode than answer for sure. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they get around to answering that in season two, but it's kind of weird how they chose to end that character's arc with all these questions.
I bet she was probably an old exec that didn't agree. And then they,
Even in the past, we see that she doesn't work for Vault-Tec anymore.
Right.
And maybe that's not true.
Well, she had her own company trying to create
the Cold Fusion,
but all the companies that she worked with and got all the supplies to create it were bought out by Vault-Tec. And so she couldn't really, she was kind of forced out of making her.
I assume she found her way into a tank.
At some point she would have had to have.
Yeah. Because Hank/Henry knew her.
Mm-hmm. He could have also met her in the time when his wife Rose left and started a life in Shady Sands with her at some point.
True, true.
So I did get a little bit of a, if not like a very close friendship, but maybe a slight romantic relationship between Moldaver and Rose. I looked at
it as a romantic relationship.
TBD.
Yeah.
TBD.
TBD.
This episode of Streaming Things is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day?
Sleep.
You would sleep more.
More, yeah.
Okay, sleep that's more. Fair. Some people might go for a run, read an extra book. A lot of us spend our whole lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. That's what therapy can do. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so that you can do more of it. You can learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. You can get empowered to be the best version of yourself.
You can also nap.
You can also just nap. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, if you've never tried it, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/streamingthings.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Streaming Things.
April is here, the tomb is empty, and it's time to give a special thanks to all of our patrons who keep the lights on at Streaming Things. And I want to give a special shout out to our super patrons for the month of April. Thank you so much to Stanton Valentino, Mattelstat, Bryce Coppin, Susie Callahan, Anthony Corona, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Ashley Hazen, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento7, Jay Scramo, Bluff Pum, a.k.a. Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Conrad, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Peaches, Emmy, Haley B, Joe Velez, John Collins, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Ashley Powers, Stephen the Fifth, Casey McCain, and Enza. Thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts. And with that, let's get back to the episode.
So after all of these bombs are dropped, we cut to Max, who's gearing up to invade the observatory with the Brotherhood, and Dane admitting more clearly that they did it to themselves and why. And he's like, hey, I got a vault we can go live in. People make your cocks explode. There's popcorn.
They got these deviled eggs and oysters. Yeah. It makes you super horny.
And Dane's like, no, no one's ever going to be safe, and there is no leaving, right? And like, there's just...
No,
they like to protect Max, but you know, they have no real hope or optimism for life getting better either. And they want to squash that in Max immediately. We cut back to more of the story of how Rose figured it out. Moldaver tells Lucy the real story of what happened. Her mother, Rose, figured everything out slowly, that he wasn't being completely honest. So she went to the surface, took the kids with her, and started a life in Shady Sands. And then Hank was angry and nuked it, killed 40,000 people and her mother, and took the kids back to the vault.
Because wasn't Shady Sands like the capital of the new California Republic?
Yeah. It was.
Yeah, that's right.
And one of my favorite things about this show is this throwaway line between, I think, Max and Lucy early on, where she's telling this memory of that she has with her mother in the vault of the sun. And how it felt so real because her mother was such a nice person.
Ah, oh, that's right.
And now it's revealed in this moment that that is a memory of when she lived in Shady Sands, mm-hmm. and that was the real son. And I just thought that was such a cool reveal.
Do you think Norm was a baby when they escaped? Or do you think he was like 25?
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell, man. And it's also revealed in this moment that the tech that's in the head, and she comes in all angry at first at Moldaver and just throws the head on her breakfast, which I thought was awesome.
That was a great touch.
And even Moldaver kind of smiles and makes like, you sassy bitch, I was going to eat them eggs. But also, like, there's a moment where Lucy's like, I even tried to stuff an old grenade into the neck hole.
I was just going to kill everybody.
But it's cool. But it's revealed that the tech is cold fusion, and that fucking gnarly ghoul that's sitting there is her mother.
Called that immediately as soon as she walked in. Yeah.
As soon as she walked in, I was like, that's a crazy ass ghoul.
Yeah.
That motherfucker far it's gone. Our pet.
It's like Michonne from The Walking Dead.
Oh, they had him on a leash.
Yeah,
she needs a vault tech code to activate the cold fusion. That's why she has Hank in the bird cage trying to suss out the code from him.
Dad, give her the code.
Mm-hmm. He said no all that time, and then immediately he's like, all right.
Yeah, okay.
Which he does. He gives it, you know, he loves his daughter. He thinks he's good. And I like how there's a, you know, this is surface level stuff, but it's still neat. There's a discussion between Cooper and Moldaver in the past, where they're talking about metaphors to movie making, because he's an actor, and he's like, well, I've done enough movies to tell you that all the best villains don't know they're villains. Mm-hmm. And he's saying that in reference to her, but also now, you know, in this moment, it actually applies to Hank, right? So it's just neat.
And that's true, though, about movies.
Oh, that's very true.
Very true.
Very true. The brain tells Norm that he can't go home. Now that you've seen everything, you're not allowed. So he locks him in there. And there's no food. There's occasionally some big bugs. So you might want to get in your dad's tank. Which kinda, we don't.
I mean, if he actually like does let him get in his dad's tank.
It's pretty nice.
It's relatively nice.
It's a nice brain.
But who's to say he's not going to get in that tank? Like, okay, cool. Let me unplug it.
Gotcha. Bud's a bud.
Bud's a bud. Say what you will about his politics and his management style. But he's a bud.
Bud's a bro. And then the Brotherhood is incoming. They get alerted that there's a Brotherhood invasion on its way. And they're like, not everybody in the Brotherhood is down for this invasion. One of the squires is like puking into one of those giant bags. Like, dude,
it's off like to the D-Day. Side a little bit. It's like D-Day,
yeah. But
for the,
yeah, the invasion for the of Normandy. Yeah. Yeah. And one of those dudes gets thrown out and it lands on the propeller of the other chopper. That was wild.
So those turrets were wildly more accurate than the one that the doctor runs into.
The Enclave that like was like unloading a billion bullets at him at point blank range and somehow missed.
And the dog.
Please remain calm. And then it proceeded to just miss everything.
Yeah, that's one of the worst parts of the show that he just old man jogs away from that Gatling gun.
Yeah.
That's literally 10 feet away. But hey, you know, technology, not what it used to be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's used to people who I can actually run. That's how it's targeting.
Yeah.
It couldn't track a shambling old man.
Yeah. Yeah. But Hank is a fascist. You know, that's another cool thing about the show is like this is a satire of capitalism. But the logical conclusion of late stage capitalism being fascism, you know, in this mind, you know, because he says we're going to create one culture. That's the problem, Lucy.
There's all these different factions.
Yeah, if you just get rid of them and make a monoculture, there's nobody's going to war. And he believes that, right? That's the he's a fascist.
He's like, if I had to choose between a violent world and a peaceful one, I'll pick the peaceful one every time.
And you agree with me.
Your mom stopped being your mother when she took you into that danger. Mm.
Cooper shows up. So there's a bunch of, it's a cool fight between the, you know, flame mothers, we'll call them.
Flame on!
The resistance and the Brotherhood. And, you know, some of them are actually taking down the people in the suits, you know. And then I love that moment where Cooper is sitting in the stairwell and whistles at him. And he's just all cocksure and tells him, you know, I used to wear one of those suits. There was a flaw in the welding back then. And he's like, let me see if it's still there. And it blows the dude's fucking back out. And it, wow. Whoa.
And then, yep, still there.
It's great.
I laughed out loud in that scene because he shoots the dude. And then they start that like lights out gunfight.
Yeah.
And at one point, like after the gunfight starts, you hear one of the dudes in the power armor go, it's that fucking ghoul. Who do you think it was? So,
I imagine they're all just clones of Michael Rappaport inside those.
fuck, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of funny instances of ADR in that sequence, but Max manages to get away. And Hank's still in there begging for Lucy to go with him to the house. And, you know, Lucy tells Max when he walks in that Hank blew up Shady Sands. And while they're arguing, Hank had put that power armor suit on somehow. Yeah. And I thought that was hilarious.
All because she couldn't just tell him, like, bad guy.
Yeah.
Bad guy.
Why? It's your dad. Let's go.
I was really hoping Maximus, like, I thought for a moment he was going to kill Hank. I thought he was going to, like, just change his whole outlook and become the guy.
That's my armor you're wearing.
Yeah, just blow his head off, but didn't happen.
No, he slapped the shit out of Max with the armor.
Yeah.
Knocks him out. But then Lucy pulls her gat, gets the drop on old dad, and he's like, hey, wait, what? I know you're never going to shoot, right? But then Cooper shoots Henry, like, in the face, like,
a cool scar.
Grazes his cheek. Yeah.
You want another fucking autograph, young Henry?
I love that. And then there's another callback to Feo Fuerte A Formal. You know? I don't know what that means, but it's cool.
Ugly, strong, and dignified.
And it's a quote from Stagecoach, John Wayne Western. Interesting. So where is my family, I think, is the big reveal from Cooper in this confrontation with Henry. Because I was never under the impression... Because multiple times throughout this show, and this is why I think they really stuck the landing, Steve, is some of the weirder things kind of really come together in this finale. But there's multiple people that kind of drop hints or make allusions to, wow, you're still alive, Coop, or Ghoul, you know, 200 years. Why you've been sticking it out a while, you know? And it's kind of like, why? Well, someone even asks him that point blank.
Like, why are you still living?
What is it that you're living for? And that's the
drugs.
I think that's the sheriff that he killed. Yeah, I love him. Oh.
No, he kills the president of the
government. Yeah, that's right.
That guy was eating cysts. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Ew.
Yeah, but the can said cysts. So he would eat them and then spit the the core
the pit out.
Yeah.
God, Christ,
that
dude, man.
That actor is really creepy in almost everything he plays in. I'm not
sure. He said, you need a new publicist. Yeah. I ain't heard nothing it's about like, it.
Oh, you're president now? Why not? President of the government. Sounds like some Idiocracy shit. Yeah,
I'm president of the government.
But the government's misspelled on their sign.
Yeah.
So funny.
The government's like five people.
Yeah.
So now we know his motivation is he's looking for his wife and daughter. I presume. I mean, last time we saw his daughter, she was on horseback with him, but we don't know how things went down from there.
Yeah, we know at some point they get divorced because he's paying alimony, but we haven't seen them get divorced yet, at least on camera. I assume that'll be a season two thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, what happened to his young daughter and wife?
Yep. Where is my fucking family? You know,
and how does he survive that? I mean, I understand the radiation, but. There was a bomb like within a mile of him, so he would have to get somewhere pretty quick. Maybe a fridge.
I mean, he was on a horse.
That is true.
Maybe that horse's name was Shadowfax, and he showed us the definition of the word haste.
That's right. Show us the meaning of the word haste. That the horse just pulls out a dictionary. looks like so that's interesting to me, but I love that, and this is where like I'm so excited for season two, because he looks at Lucy and like there's a different, he's like, you're my bro now, like I like you, you're cool, we both lost fingers, we both got them back, that's spunky of you.
Yeah. We've lost family members.
Yeah. I don't know how you got your finger back, it looks really bad, by the way.
You should probably get that checked.
But he like, you know, hey, look, and they're looking out at the wasteland. He's like, looks like chaos, but there's always somebody behind the wheel. That's who I want to talk to. I think it's cool.
The dude in the upper level, the shady guy.
Yeah, yeah, baby. Yeah. There he goes,
Steve. That's the dude behind the wheel.
What about Hank just jumping off the top of wherever they're at?
And he has like little thrusters.
Yeah.
Well, we saw Max do that earlier.
Yeah.
The thrusters. But he immediately knew how to work a T-60.
Cooper also does the classic Fallout line, war never changes.
Yeah.
Is that a Fallout line?
Oh, it happens
three times in that episode.
Yeah, they say it three times in this episode, but like, yeah, that war never changes. That's something that like, I think it starts like every Fallout
game. Yeah.
Ron Perlman says it.
Yeah, every opening, it talks about what happened. And then it's like, but we know war never changes.
Mm. Come on. Yeah. That's not a bad catch line.
I popped.
Hard.
I popped hard for it.
And Lucy shoots her mom. And I mean, that's what happened.
I love the segue. And Lucy shoots her mom.
Because, he thinks she's pulling a gun on him for a second.
I got to know, what's the deal with Lucy's mom? So
Lucy's mom
has
got it going on.
Has got it ghouling on. Ooh. Like, obviously she's a ghoul. I assume she's a feral ghoul, or at least like not all there.
Yeah, she's on her
way. She's lost her humanity.
Somewhat.
But Moldaver's like,
I think she's holding on to hope that she can cure her.
I guess, yeah, she's trying to figure out a cure for her, but it's kind of like, man, I love watching her decay and lose her humanity and just real sad.
Yeah, there's the heart necklace there. But then I love that, the iconic line from Lucy after she shoots her mom. Okie dokie. She's going to go wander the wasteland with Cooper now. That's awesome.
Come on, girl.
I want that show immediately.
Go outside, nerd.
Touch grass.
Touch grass. Let's go meet your maker.
And then Max wakes up. Lucy? Lucy? And I wonder if it's going to be like a villain turn that he thinks she abandoned him, or if he's just going to be worried for her. But either way, he wakes up alone now.
Maybe he thinks the ghoul kidnapped her. So when they meets up with her, he like tries to kill him.
Yeah, he's going to chase the ghoul down. He's already fought the ghoul in the suit and lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sucks.
Now he has a whole brotherhood at his back.
Now he's Knight Maximus.
He wakes up and Dane shows up and was like, you killed Moldaver? Whoa, guys, he killed Moldaver. And they're like, Maximus is the winner. Maximus is the winner.
You think he's going to like toe the line and be honest for once. And he never is. He
tries to kind of stop Dane. But again, Dane is so pessimistic that they kind of do this on purpose. Like, this will be good for both of us and definitely good for you. I'm looking out for you.
I'll be your squire.
Yeah.
But before that, I skipped over this, but like before that, Moldaver shows back up and activates the cold fusion again, and it turns on all the lights in the city.
Yeah.
I guess they have it connected to the power grid.
It's awesome.
To what end? And she tells Maximus, well, she holds Rose's hand or the corpse's hand of Rose, says they did it, and then asks Maximus, you know, hey, what are your friends at the Brotherhood going to do with unlimited power? Something good?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, when it came to last time I've seen that happen, it was with Palpatine and nothing good happened.
No.
Unlimited power.
So they talk quite a bit about the Enclave, but they don't ever show, is Rose supposed, or not Rose, but is Moldaver supposed to be a part of the Enclave?
I don't know.
We don't know. More like the Offclave, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, in the game, they are like the Brotherhood's nemesis,
yeah.
Kind of. They have really, I think the armor is way cooler, but I was in the hoping Enclave? To see. Yeah. I was hoping they wear Tesla armor, which is powered by Tesla's power. I don't fucking know.
It's just got like
Nikolai Tesla?
It's just a cyber truck.
Yeah.
Walking around.
Bumblebee.
Yep. All the lights in the city come on, though. That's cool. I like that scene a lot. But Cooper and the puppy and the lady are all wandering the wasteland together. That's a fire trio. We get to see the Hollywood sign sponsored by Nuka-Cola.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last funny. Little jab at capitalism there at the end. And the whole thing about, you know, Cooper having a sponsor, you know, everybody's got a sponsor. You know, it's just, I love all the critiques of capitalism that came together in this episode. And then we cut to Hank's bitch ass walking and oh shit, there's like a big old city. It looks like Seattle. It's like the Space Needle there.
It is New Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Is it really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I assume it is, but.
I think that seems to be the consensus online is that it's supposed to be New Vegas as well, which makes sense because, you know, this is, I think, the most in line with the timeline of New Vegas, right?
Yeah.
And then the villain of the game, Fallout New Vegas, is one of the CEOs in the scene that we see before.
Mr. House.
So it looks like they're going to be tying those worlds together in an upcoming season.
Interesting. And that's the end of season one of Fallout of this episode. Everybody, good night. Go home. Bye-bye.
It's the end of the beginning.
That's true.
But cue the Smashing Pumpkins song.
Which one?
The end is the beginning is the end.
Oh, I was thinking, how does that relate at all? Despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage. Not bullet with butterfly wings. Gotcha. Gotcha. Anyhoozle, this brings us to our rad moments, our favorite three moments of this episode. Jimmy, drop number three upon my chest.
I'm going to pop it. Oh, I don't know. I like the reveal, right? The meeting of the minds with Vault-Tec. I think that was a great. It was done really well to see all the people talking about, you know, how they're in control and seeing the people behind the curtain, so to speak. I didn't know that from playing the game. I obviously assume that Vault-Tec is kind of the criminal here, but I didn't know that the four or five of them kind of conspired together to create all this mayhem. And I really liked kind of that reveal. It opened my eyes to the show.
Awesome. What about you, Mr. Steve?
My number three is Norm meeting the Buds. It was a fun little, I like that conclusion to Norm's backstory of trying to figure out what's going on in Vault 31. And then you walk in there and, oh, Bud's still alive, but he's a little Roomba. And, you know, everyone's been held in stasis for 200 years and they released them periodically to help shepherd the vaults dwellers into the new age of humanity, the way that Vault-Tec wants it to be. I thought that was a very fun reveal and I'm excited to see where that goes next. What's your number three?
Mine's the same, the very same. Didn't expect to care about Norm's storyline anywhere near as much as I do. And the whole Protocol 53, it was very funny. Brain on a Roomba. Dug all that combined with the big reveal that this was, you know. It's kind of the same. It's right in the same scene as Jimmy mentioned, yeah. Too. It's just intercut with
a lot of information there.
Yeah. And I did love that CEO roundtable. You know, I thought that Walton Goggins played the listening in and the concern and stuff very well. But ultimately, Brain on a Roomba sells it for me.
We knew his wife was involved, obviously, but we didn't know to what manner.
We didn't know she was ready to nuke people.
Yeah. Yeah. She didn't want the dogs in there. That's just her whole ploy to get rid of their current dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's going. It cuts to Walton Goggins. Does she not? Does she not like Roosevelt this whole time?
Is he not a good boy? Is he not the goodest boy?
He's the goodest boy.
I don't understand. Jimmy, what about your number two?
My number two has got to be the setup, the end, setting up the continuation of the series. I love seeing the ghoul and Lucy and Dog Meat together, setting off into the sunset on their quest. It's a good start to another RPG-esque, you know, show. I think in setting up New Vegas, it's going to be great. I think it's really cool to see them plan the next series using things from other games. So it's a nice little touch.
Steve?
My number two is the reveal that Moldaver's friend Ghoul is Rose, Lucy's mom. It's a very sad sort of end, like this character who thought her mom was dead. And meanwhile, this whole time, you know, she was betrayed by her dad, the person she's been looking through this whole movie and not only or TV show. And not only did he, you know, facilitate her mom being killed, but he like murdered a whole town just to make sure that, you know, the rehabilitation of the earth was done the Vault Tech way and not the incorrect way.
Yeah.
It's a very, very heartbreaking scene for that character. This character we didn't even really know, Rose, just seeing just this desiccated corpse, like, her necklace is like fused into her neck and everything. It's like, oh, that's fucking awful. Oh, Jesus. It's a heartbreaking moment. That's my number two.
We're simpatico, my friend.
What?
Yeah, my number two as well. And I thought, you know, we didn't get to Ella Purnell's a fantastic actress, but we haven't given her much to do because of the nature of her character in this show. It's okie dokie. Even like the most heinous things are kind of like, ugh, I guess I'll cut off the head and slice the ass jerky. And in this moment, we get this horrific reveal and we get to see the tears welling in her eyes, the horror and disappointment at her father. And it's I felt it, even though I didn't know who Rose was and we haven't gotten much emotion from Lucy. It was a tear-jerking moment for me when it was revealed to be her mother, which I didn't call at all. I was just like, look at that fucking ghoul. That's crazy.
Ew. Yeah. At the dinner table?
Ew. Yeah, it was a big reveal for me. Jimmy, your favorite moment of the finale, coming in hot.
I liked the big battle sequence from beginning to end. I mean, obviously big fan of the ghoul, and you touched on it a little bit. Just that whole scene where he's just the baddest of the bad. Hey, I've worn those suits before. I'll just wreck house real quick. It was a really cool scene to see the vertebrates coming in.
It's interesting he didn't shoot Max in episode two in the chest below the plate.
Yeah,
it just occurred to me. Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. But the show would have ended.
Yeah. Well, it was that storyline, which might have been a good thing.
He didn't have that flashback yet. It wasn't reminded.
Oh,
yeah.
That's true. Oh man, I forgot.
But Steve, your number one favorite moment of the finale.
Mine
is hopefully not mine again.
Oh, I hope it is. I'm hoping for a we all everybody.
We all everybody.
My number one favorite moment of the episode is the Vault Tech meeting, where we get to see the true origin story of how the vault and the scientific experiments came to be. It was just all these companies getting together and plotting to use their resources for their own sickening purposes. But then also that Barb is like, well, we just drop the bomb and guarantee that one of us wins. Like, we'll wipe out all the competition. It'll just be us. And like that, as someone who played the games and I've been a part of like finding all these fucked up vaults and all that stuff, kind of seeing where it all started and how it came together was really, really fun to see. And you put a bunch of people in a dark a war room with a circular light above them all, and they got their little nameplates, and they're all talking about, you know, how are we going to fuck up the world? You know, those kind of scenes are always fun. Vote for Dr. Strangelove in the Patreon poll.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, that's my number one. Is it yours?
It's not. Dang, I mean, it kind of is, because like the whole
we did not pop
critique of capitalism is my favorite thing about this show. But Jimmy's number two, I believe, is what it was. But I just love that bit where Cooper goes on that monologue about chaos and somebody being behind the wheel and how he's trying to recruit Lucy. And it's the most kindness we've seen from him. And now our two main characters, well, there's three, but the two that we like are are about to go on this adventure together with the fucking, with the doggo, with the goodest boy,
with dog me
betwixt them,
the goodest boy,
EX-404.
And honestly, I've got a.
Does that dog have a real name?
I'm not dog me. Him.
No, like the actor dog.
Oh, oh I don't sure know. It does.
Because that's my special
dog meat as himself.
I saw somebody on Twitter say that this might be her most controversial hear me out of all time. And it was a photo of Cooper as the ghoul. And I'm like, that's interesting. I dig that as well. Hear me out is like, I would fuck.
Oh,
let me explain why I would fuck okay. them.
I was like, I'm waiting.
Yeah. I was like waiting for the hot take.
Yeah. And you guys got to be more chronically online. Come on. But I love the promise of season two with, yeah. you know, and I'm sure I'll be let down and they'll only hang out for like half of episode one and something will split them apart. But
think she's going to try to fuck him?
Doubt it. Yeah. Just laying there one night.
Yeah. So you want to have
sex if you want.
I don't know.
No, I doubt that. But I don't think they'll be like adventuring and fighting together for right. long because that'd be way too cool.
Probably be a cool like buddy cop movie, you know?
Yeah.
I think that'd be right.
That'd be great. I love being a good Shane Black buddy cop movie. But yeah, that's my number one. I'm just so excited for the promise of season two with that trio roaming the wasteland. Now it's time for our bobbleheads, our Ooh. Easter eggs that we discovered throughout episode 8 that we haven't mentioned yet. I'll leave that to the two video game playing nerds.
Oh, well, I'll start off with some surface level stuff. We kind of mentioned the war never changes bit. They right. say that a lot. All the different vaults that they mention in the war room scene are actual vaults you can play in one of the games in one way or another. Jimmy, what do you have?
So I can number 27 was the overcrowded vault that they talked about. They're like, we could just cram a bunch of people into a vault. 51 was where they would pump drugs into the air system and see how the people would react. 87 was the children one where they would they just put a bunch of children into a vault and take their parents away. So it's really cool to see all of them talk about that. Mr. House, we talked a little bit about this. He is the main antagonist in New Vegas. He's the CEO of Robco.
Oh, yeah, the Robco guy. And you talked about Robco having their own suits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you got?
So when Hank, at the very end, he steps over a Deathclaw skull, yes. which a Deathclaw is like...
Oh, is the thing with the horns?
Yeah. That's like the most dangerous thing you can come across in the wasteland. Like if you're walking around, especially like if you're an early leveled character in Fallout, yeah, and if you
toast.
Somehow manage to cross a Deathclaw, fucking run, because those things are mean, nasty, and strong. But
so they were actually created by the military, and yeah. they escaped after the war. So now they're just roaming, and they're all irradiated and really pissed off. So
yeah,
they have little skulls. Almost every time you run into one, there's a little skull next to its name, and it's like, don't fuck with this thing.
Yeah, that just means it's really outranking
yeah, the level. Yeah, you're toast.
Yeah, yeah.
You ever kill one?
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. At the very beginning of Fallout 4, you get your first power armor and they kind of send one at you just to get you used to the mechanics of the game. But very rarely do you come across them more so in endgame, but throughout the game, you're not taking one on. It's they're really, really hard. The game is generally harder than I thought. I recently playing it, like, I'm getting wrecked. Maybe I'm just not as good as I
thought. Yeah, you're probably just trash.
Yeah.
But have you thought about, as the kids say, get good?
Getting good?
Yeah.
G-U-D, baby.
No, I did not. Andy said that to me one time, like, years ago. And I was like, what does that mean?
Like, get good?
Yeah. And I've, like, fixed this spelling. I was like, you mean get good? And he's like, never mind. Yeah,
get good.
That was before I started playing, like, Souls games and stuff.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
We get another... Ink Spots drop. We Three, My Echo, My Shadow, and Me is another the Ink Spots song, which actually also played in Fallout 76 over the Appalachia radio. And we kind of mentioned it before, but the city that Hank sees is the city of New Vegas.
Yeah.
And my last one is Hank's Code. 101097 is the release date for the first ever Fallout game.
Oh, that's right.
October 10th, 1997.
Nailed it.
Good catch.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, those were the last three that I had too. So we picked out a ton of stuff throughout these episodes. So, and they're all over the place. So
yeah, there's probably a ton that we missed because there's
for sure.
Like literally every frame of this show has some sort of bobblehead in it. Kind of. Yeah. So.
Bobble baby.
There you go. Yeah. yaddy.
Nah, it's different.
I know. It's just fun.
It's just fun to say.
Yeah. Especially when you podcast.
That's
so potty yaddy yaddy.
Oh. I also say that when I take a shit.
Yep.
But Steve, it's time for our special nominations. Special, of course, is an acronym that stands for
strength, perception, endurance, charisma, intelligence, agility, and luck. And we are deciding who had the best performance in this episode that facilitated all those attributes.
That's goddamn right. Jimmy, who are you saying is the most specialist of episode 8?
The most specialist. I'll give it to Mr. Walton Goggins.
The Gogster?
The Gogster. Obviously, the guy carried the show. He's such a powerhouse in that anti-hero role. You see him predominantly in villain roles, but he's just really captivating as an actor. And you know it's him, whether he's covered in hours and hours of makeup. He's just really, really good at playing that kind of character. And I loved him. In every episode, you just get excited when you see him. You, some would say you pop.
I pop hard.
Yeah.
Every some time. Would say that.
Yeah.
I don't know who.
Is there really anybody to give it to other than Walton Goggins?
I actually was going to give it to Ella Purnell. Because this was
I do love me some Ella.
This was the episode. Hey. Thanks, Rihanna. this was the episode where I think Ella Purnell really finally got to... The goose is loose, as I said.
Goosey
was Lucy. No, I don't like that. no, this was the episode where like Ella Purnell has kind of been all in this like, aw shucks, looking around.
Yeah.
Hasn't had a lot to sink her teeth into really, but this is the episode that she got to finally be like, oh, this was her episode.
Yeah.
Whereas Walton Goggins is great and he carries the show and I fucking love him. And anytime he's on the screen, I instantly lean forward. I'm much more involved. But, you know, this was her episode to really shine. And that's why I'm giving her the special for this particular episode.
I was really going to fuck with you guys and be like Maximus.
George Lopez. George Lopez.
Just to see what you guys would say.
I think Maximus after episode 6 is a pretty great character. And there was nothing ever wrong with the actor's performance ever.
Aaron Motton. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Aaron Motton. He's a good actor. He's not doing anything wrong. I just don't think the character itself is very interesting.
Is he in anything else that I would know of?
He was in Father Stew. He was in Emancipation.
I don't think he was just engaging, you know. And Steve, I think you convinced me. You know, I think Ella Purnell deserves the special award. However, I'm stubborn and I'm going to give it to Walton Goggins.
Hey, you gave it to Ella Purnell in the first episode. So let's flip flop.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, there we go. I do love Ella Purnell. I think they're the main two. I'm so excited to see them return to these characters in season 2. Hopefully we get it, you know, rather quickly. Yeah, I don't know. It might be 2 years before we see this. Probably
2 years, yeah.
Bezos is like, make it now.
Hurry up. I'll tell you a double.
We got to, I'm going to buy Bethesda games too.
Yeah. Yeah. But thank you guys for choosing us on this journey of streaming Fallout, continue our Star Wars series, and look forward to streaming The Boys season 4 and streaming House of the Dragon season 2 along with us. We're going to start some pre-coverage, revisiting the first seasons and stuff of both of those shows in May. Until then, we're going to be knocking out the rest of our patron-demanded movies. You can go to patreon.com/streamingthings to get some extra bonus content like this month's poll of dark comedies, looking like it's going to be bodies, but Dr. Strangelove or Death of Stalin or Seven Psychopaths could pull ahead. We need your vote.
All these movies are wonderful movies.
That's very true. That's very true. But that's all the time we've got for right now. We love you all very much. Thank you for tuning in for streaming Fallout. We've got to go return some videotapes. My name is Kit.
Your guess is as good as mine.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming.